Hi friends! Welcome to Charlie and Steve Watch Stuff, and today we are watching Batman the Animated Series. My name is Steve Selnick, and joining me as always, he just got back from running away from a road rage incident with the Joker. It's Charlie Peppers. Charlie, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's funny you say that. In LA, I'm known as the friend from Brooklyn who doesn't drive.
Oh yeah, that's right. You totally you don't drive. My bad. I totally forgot that you don't drive.
No. This is a good time to highlight that the bus system in LA is dependable and very affordable. Bus system is a good way to get around. The train system is a good way to get around. It also goes to the beach. It's been extended all the way to downtown Santa Monica. So if you want to get somewhere, and I calculated one time driving with a friend, it took the same amount of time taking the train to downtown Santa Monica from Hollywood as it took driving from Hollywood to downtown Santa Monica with traffic. So if you want to save money and also relax and just have a book and go through emails and all of your shit like that, the train could be a more... not only green way to do that, it could be a less stressful way to do that.
Shout out to that LA public transit system. Who would have thunk it? I used to take the train from Santa Monica to downtown, that expo line, when it existed, and I loved it. I loved doing it. It was super easy, and you're right, it takes about the same amount of time. So, and you just feel like a better person because you're saving the environment at the same time.
Absolutely. And saving money because car insurance and... Carno,
that too.
And just a lot of shit.
Let's get into the two episodes of Batman the Animated Series that we're going to be watching today. Joker's Favor and Vendetta, the first of which we're going to cover is Joker's Favor, released on September 11th, 1992. Written by Paul Dini and directed by Boyd Kirkland, the plot of this episode is when an ordinary man inadvertently crosses paths with the Joker, he is plunged into a nightmare. I think crossing paths is a very calm way to say what happens in the opening of this episode, but we'll get to it.
This ain't When Harry Met Sally. The Joker is terrifying in this episode, and I'm so fucking excited. I'm excited to talk about all the things Joker.
So getting into the opening of this episode, we have our quote-unquote ordinary man. His name's Charlie. He's sitting in traffic. A radio plays that a con has escaped today from the prison. We can only assume that this is the Joker escaping, since we know that this episode is titled Joker's Favor. And this guy is complaining about how much his life sucks. He's going to get the same old tired meal from his same old tired life, and he's in the same old tired traffic from his same old tired job. And all of a sudden, he gets buzzed by some cops. And then he gets buzzed by Batman. And then a rando in a Winnebago with, not a Winnebago, a station wagon with a bunch of luggage on the top of it also buzzes by him. And this is the moment where he snaps, because you wouldn't yell at cops and you wouldn't yell at Batman, but I can yell at some rando who cuts me off on the freeway. And just as he starts to, quote unquote, cuss this guy out, he realizes that the driver is the Joker. Loved it. Just loved it. And I love that Joker's immediately outsmarting his adversary. So that was really great. And he has the Joker's attention. He's like, oh shit. Like, have you ever had, you don't drive, but I can tell you for sure, back in my younger days when I was, let's just say, on less therapy and medication, where I took out some of my anger on the drivers around me, and there are definitely times where you decide to say something and then immediately regret saying something. Sorry, mom, I'm fine. Nothing ever happened. But yeah, that whole, like, shrinking down into your seat, that feeling is a very familiar one. I thought they did that really well. And then, lesson for you road ragers, sometimes people follow you and you never know when that person can be the Joker.
Hold up. This is me coming in hot as somebody who, again, takes public transportation. Steve, have you ever been followed by a driver?
I've never been followed all the way home by a driver.
The fuck?
I have had tangos with drivers that have lasted more than a moment that... some were my doing and some were not.
That is so strange to me. Well, maybe it's, again,
not proud of it.
I mean, we all do things that we're not proud of at certain moments. I just don't get the culture of you get that upset that you're going to follow somebody or you're going to yell at somebody or do that. Like, what do you think the end result is going to be? Like, what is the best case scenario in your head for that happening in the moment? It doesn't compute for me.
Well, we'll leave that rhetorical because I can't come up with a good answer for it. But I mean, it's a good point. In the case of Charlie and the Joker, the Joker decides to be very aggro about it. Charlie runs away into a dark corner of the woods, which is when you're running away from the Joker. Bad move. Just terrible move. And his car breaks down on a hillside, and he's just cowering behind a tree thinking that he's lost him. And all of a sudden, the Joker tosses two pennies at him and he goes, "Here's my 2 cents," which... bars, first of all. Mm-hmm. Absolute bars from the Joker using his words against him. And Joker acts like he's going to kill Charlie here, like reaching into his pocket like he's going to pull out a gun or a weapon or something like that. And Charlie begs for his life, saying that he'll do absolutely anything. And Joker goes, "Okay, you got a deal. I don't know what I want. Don't know when I'm going to want it. But when I do want it, you're going to be hearing from me." And I thought that right here was that first moment of like, oh yeah, they're getting the Joker here. Because he has chaos in his brain, and he knows that he's going to be good for some sort of chaos down the line, but he's not quite sure what yet. And he has both the foresight to know that this guy's going to be useful, and also just the absolute like unhingedness that comes with it. And I thought it was pitch perfect. What do you think,
okay,
Charlie?
I am glad to hear you talking about the Joker with this tone. I'm happy to see you light up talking about this version of him, because this is my Joker. Like, my version of the Joker has arrived. He's got his girl Harley Quinn, who we'll talk about later. And to yes and what you said, it's not just that he has chaos, he has calculated chaos. The Joker is so dangerous because people tend to underestimate just how meticulous he is with his plans. It's not something that you would tell from just looking at him, but he's no slump when it comes to just mapping out a plan. A, B, C, D, E, he is always 10 steps ahead in a way that rivals Batman. If Joker were pure chaos and just unpredictable, he wouldn't keep Batman on his toes the way that he does here. And the fact that he has the same level of glee going after this rando on the road as he does terrorizing Commissioner Gordon and terrorizing Batman just shows that to Joker, he is certifiably insane, and I'm here for it.
Totally agree. And we, after this first display of insanity from the Joker, we get a cut to 2 years later, which again, I loved it. I absolutely loved that we got this huge time jump. And I also loved that we immediately got Batman in Gordon's office, and he's just like super fucking chill with having Batman in his office. I loved it. I love the progression of the evolution. And also just like that, he's out the door, or out the window, I should say. And Gordon's like, "I hate it when he does that." So I just, you know, watching again, I don't know why it's in this order in Max. I just feel like if you started from the very beginning on Max and just watched it straight through, you would be so confused about the nature of this relationship. So I'm really glad that we're doing it in the correct chronological order, because I just feel like this relationship especially is blooming in a way that I'm really enjoying. And they're not holding our hands too much, and they're working together. They're very chill with each other, and Gordon knows it's a little bit outside the lines, but he's like, "This guy's here to help, so I'm gonna let him help."
To add to what you're saying, it gets even more dynamic once Barbara, Commissioner Gordon's daughter, gets introduced. And when we get to her introduction episode, we're gonna see her very slowly, before she puts on the costume, like form that relationship with Batman where she calls on him herself and where she steps in at certain points. I wonder what Bruce's mindset is when he starts working with Barbara as Batgirl, having this relationship with Commissioner Gordon. Like, how does he justify in his head that he is working alongside who's becoming one of his really close and best allies, and not telling him that his daughter is in this work? It's a very interesting conundrum for me, but also on the other side of it, Barbara's making her choice to be doing this work, so Bruce is respecting that by just keeping the secret. And I find it very interesting, just the Batman Commissioner Gordon dynamic, and Barbara adds something even more complicated and interesting and exciting to that. I can't wait.
For sure. Yeah, it's nice to see this picture now, and we definitely have something to look forward to in terms of how these two characters grow together and what kind of wrench a character like Barbara throws into the mix. In this future, 2 years later, the Joker is throwing darts at Commissioner Gordon's picture. There's going to be a celebration for him and his accomplishments that he was hesitant to go to in the first place. But our guy Harvey Bullock is like, yeah, but there's gonna be good grub there, boss. So we gotta go celebrate you. And he made good on the grub. And so we cut to Joker throwing darts at his picture, and he's pissed that he's not invited to go celebrate Commissioner Gordon, because arguably who has given the commissioner more to do than the Joker, which honestly, objectively correct. Like, actually, that objectively correct.
Joker and Maleficent would get along. That's all I'm going to say. You didn't invite me to your party.
So I'm going to blow it up.
I'm going to curse your daughter.
I am going to curse your daughter.
Which you pricks a finger.
don't stay away from those thorns. You don't want to touch those thorns. Okay. The only thing I have in my notes here in all capital letters is Harley Quinn, baby. We got Harley Quinn. Let's go. I'm going to add our first Riddler trophy here in just sort of the development of Harley Quinn, because if you did or did not know, we have mentioned it in this podcast, but Harley Quinn is an animated series creation. Harley Quinn, according to the creators of the show in our research for this, did say that Harley was originally just going to be that attractive female disguised cop who brings the cake in with all of that other stuff at the end of the episode. And they were like, hold on a second, you know, like most good villains have their femme fatale, if you will. So it led them to create the character of Harley Quinn, who obviously doesn't get a ton of backstory in this episode, but we will learn more about her origins as we get into the series a little bit further. And so we have Harley Quinn here in her iconic original animated series costume. We get her out of costume and makeup a lot, which I actually wasn't expecting, but just a really fun introduction to Harley Quinn here. She's obviously like very much so egging him on, is sort of like the Bonnie to his Clyde. And Charlie, you say that you've said this a couple of times and you have it here in the notes again, so I'd love to have you expound on this a little bit now that she's here. You say that Harley makes Joker a stronger character. What do you mean by that? How is that true?
Well, without Harley Quinn, Joker is just somebody who's committing acts of chaos on Gotham. But with Harley, show that Joker is willing to play the long game, particularly because of how their relationship starts. Harley was treating Joker at Arkham Asylum when she was just an intern, and he slowly wormed his way inside of her brain. He twisted her around. He got her to think that he was in love with her, and she became Harley Quinn. I would say that Harley is just as much one of Joker's victims as the people that he bombs and terrorizes in Gotham. So seeing him flaunt around one of his victims, who in her own right is a deeply complex character, just shows how insidious and wicked and twisted Joker really is. Like, Harley is somebody who Joker has broken the most, because they are in an abusive relationship. Would you say they're in an abusive relationship, Steve?
I would say that they're in an abusive relationship. It's like the definition of a toxic relationship. It literally involved toxins. I think that the Joker does feel more fleshed out having Harley there to sort of be his, you know, his number one and also his counterbalance. Yeah. So moving on to some of the more sinisterness of the Joker that you just described, he decides that now is the time to call in his favor with his old pal, Charlie. And Charlie has moved to Ohio. He has changed his name. And none of it matters, because the Joker still has tabs on him. He's had tabs on him the whole time. He described it as a game to him, that he was almost like a pet project in a way, which, again, like that maniacal laser focus that I just totally believed. I just 100% believed that the Joker would just like lock into this guy, make sure he never lost track of him. And even though he's been doing his own criminal mastermind thing for 2 whole years, he knew where this guy was, and he knew how he was going to get him again. And just to guarantee that he was going to get on this next flight to Gotham, he has his two big henchmen goon guys roll past in a car just as he's telling him that he's going to get on that flight. And you're like, oh shit, yeah, there, you're getting on this flight. And he's like, good, see ya. And then you just kind of get that like little Mark Hamill. I mean, shout out to Mark Hamill for sure. Let's get Mark Hamill. Come on the podcast. Come on, Mark. You what else are you doing, man? Come on the podcast. You're come Luke Skywalker's a part of the Force now. Just come on the podcast. But man, masterclass, absolute masterclass, and just how to switch tone on a dime. Like, he's so nimble in this role. It's really, really incredible.
Yeah, he really is. And I saw this episode years ago when I did a rewatch of the series, and I had forgotten exactly what Joker's plan for Charlie was.
Harley picks Charlie up from the airport. He thinks he's going to like sneak away, but then Harley, not in clown makeup, picks him up, and Joker's explaining what he wants Charlie to do. And he just goes, Harley's going to knock on a door 3 times and you're going to open it. And Charlie's like, that's it. And Joker's like, that's it. Like, it's a big cake. Like, she can't open the door by herself. I literally thought this was like, of course, that's what he wants him to do. Why would, first of all, I was like, what is this guy going to do? Nothing. He's like, he's not special. He's not capable. He's, as Joker said, he's lost hair since he's seen him last. Like, the guy's actively balding and getting more out of shape. And it's like, yeah, what else would he do? Like, but I think it's also the perfect thing to be like, this guy's clearly like, I don't want to hurt anybody. Like, I don't want to do anything bad. But he's like, oh, I can open a door. So I thought our expectations were subverted correctly. And I really liked the outcome. It made me laugh. And that's sort of like, of course. You're just like, oh, of course, this is all he wants him to do. And I immediately went, I wonder what the bigger plan is that he is like unwittingly a part of. So I was into it. What about you?
I enjoy that Joker terrorized him, but I wish that we would have. I thought the fact that he brought Charlie in for this plan in particular was kind of lame because Charlie didn't really have much to do. You know, it kind of felt in my head, the bigger thing for Charlie would have Joker would have knocked him out, brought him to this location, and Charlie wakes up and there's a bomb strapped to him. And
interesting.
Batman has to juggle like multiple things while there's a bomb strapped to Charlie. But in the end, it's not really a bomb at all. It's something else. So he puts him through all the stress and anxiety just for naught. It just seems to be it feels a little lame to me just that this is the thing that he brought Charlie in on. But then again, he did think that the entire place was going to blow. So what have you.
I think the point that the beginning of the episode was trying to drive home is that Charlie's invisible. No one sees Charlie. The cops, Batman, obviously the Joker, but he just believes that he is a pushover for everyone else in his life around him. So I think the Joker thought that no one's going to think anything of this giant cake coming in off schedule and this invisible man that let him in because he's so unassuming. Basically, like, I want no one to suspect anything until it's too late. I think that's his angle, and maybe that was like how I took it. But let's get into the actual celebration itself. We have Charlie walking into the celebration. Bruce is in attendance, but you know, he can't stay. Busy social life. Gordon was like, what, I would trade to have your life instead. And Bruce was like, you know, maybe not. It's okay. It's just a different life. And Bullock is there without a hat. I actually almost didn't recognize Bullock without the hat. For some reason, I thought his hair was going to be less kempt than that. For some reason, I was expecting Bullock to just like not have a clean haircut.
You think Bullock's handsome. You think he's cute.
I think Bullock's a piece of shit. But yeah, also, yeah, he's a little cute. He can get it. It's fine. You have this noted as brilliant as well. But when Bruce is driving away with Alfred and Charlie is trying to figure out how maybe he can signal to Batman that something is going on, because I guess Batman would definitely be around Commissioner Gordon's celebration, and he decides to fly a bat-shaped looking thing in a giant window that looks like the bat signal, and Alfred sees it first and is like, hey, I think you're needed back there, sir. So Batman, his attention has been gotten, and he is going to come in to try and save whatever is going on there and investigate whatever is going on there. And so we get the three knocks, and Charlie lets in Harley, again, not in clown makeup, but in a police uniform, wheeling in a giant cake. Bullock immediately becomes a whole fucking pervert and says something lewd to Harley, and Harley takes out her nightstick and gives him a quick shot to the shin. And my favorite part of the scene was Montoya just like smugly smiling in the background, being like, yeah, you fucking deserve that, you goddamn pig. And Harley recites a sweet poem that turns sour right at the end and releases a gas that seems to paralyze everybody, but they seem conscious because you clearly see Gordon's eyes looking around and blinking, and he sweats at some point out of nervousness. Joker pops out of the cake. The gas was never explained. I know you have here in your notes that it makes no sense. It's apparently a paralysis gas that Joker has. Harley comes over to Gordon and he plants a bomb on his lapel. And this is where you find out he's clearly conscious because his eyes are like following Harley and he starts sweating from nervousness. But Batman swoops in and grabs the bomb and shoots it out of the roof, and it explodes out of the roof. And that's when Harley and Joker know that their plans are foiled by Batman. Is there anything about this sequence that you want to pin onto, or is this just kind of like animated action?
2 to 3 different things from that sequence really stood out to me. One, it was ingenious that Charlie thought to do that with the bat that just happened to be in that
super
area.
Smart.
I thought that was very clever, and it won this episode points back for me, which I already love it, but the whole Charlie just being the person to knock on the door, I thought that was kind of eh, but him thinking of the bat having a makeshift bat signal was very, very cool. I really love Harley Quinn just, again, giving Bullock a thwack. I thought that was incredible.
So good.
Also, that moment, I would say, is the most important moment for Harley in the episode, and I'm going to tell you why. The fact that Harley is able to put a pig like Bullock in his place and to know that she's being disrespected and not being treated the way that she should be shows that she isn't a lost cause. There's always a possibility for Harley to rise above the Joker and to claim her personhood back. I don't think that Harley would work as a character if there wasn't that fiery perseverance. Like, there's something very strong about Harley. Yes, she's under the Joker's thumb, but I don't think that it's because she's a weak person. With Harley, I think that it's because she is 1000% about everything she does. She's going to be with the Joker. She's with him 1000%. I think that if she decided not to be with him, and if she really committed to that, she would also be about it 1000%. But because of how deep the Joker's claws are in her and how he's able to just manipulate people, I think that he has a hold on her that I don't think the average man would be able to hold on her, just because it's him. It's not Harley's like this with everyone thing. It's the this is how deeply the Joker has her fucked up thing, because Harley is a bad bitch and you're always rooting for Harley for some reason. You want her to just turn around and put the Joker in his place. What do you think?
No, I totally agree with that, and it makes me excited for more of her characterization and background and how she grows and evolves. I know that there's an episode specifically with her and Poison Ivy coming up in the near future as well, where they interact, and I'm excited for that one. So I'm just excited to see just like the her growth and what we get out of her.
I would also say that while Harley Quinn makes Joker a better character, she also makes Poison Ivy a better character, you know? So when we see that dynamic, it's definitely going to be, I can't wait. It's going to be really interesting.
Well, getting into the kind of finale of this episode, Batman has to get through the first two henchies and Harley Quinn before he can get on with the Joker. So he takes down the two henchies pretty easily. Harley gets intercepted on the way to some weapons. She tries to grab a knife, but it's stopped quickly and Batman throws her away. I know that she gets better at fighting later on, which Charlie also has noted here. And Batman is off to pursue the Joker. He follows into what looks like a replica Aztec temple. Where are they? Well, I got confused by this because I thought that they were at like Okay, shrugs, sure. They're in an Aztec temple full of traps now.
I have no
great
idea.
I didn't track on where they were because I thought they were in like a banquet hall, and all of a sudden that they, so maybe I just missed that, you know, cartoons. He's avoiding all these traps and Joker's like, they're real traps all the way down to the poison darts, which is again totally Joker. And he seems to fall into this fake floor with spikes underneath it, and I just want to shout out the shot of him. You see the darkness and the little peeking light, and then you just see his eyes open because he's hiding underneath the floor that fell out from underneath him, and you just see like Batman, like they do this is the point, and they do this a couple times in the next episode as well, where you just get really good like Batman's glowing eyes in the darkness, and that shit is like cocaine for me, and I love it, and it makes me energized. It gets me going. Anyway, Joker seems beaten by Batman, and he tosses another bomb and runs out of the Aztec temple, where he sees Charlie, and Charlie decides to grow a pair and gives the Joker a big old rib shot, which apparently the Joker can't take a good rib shots are now canon to just be an absolute between Two-Face and Charlie. Like, rib shots are just fucking people up. And so that's the secret sauce, I guess, is a solid rib shot. And then he's like, I'm going to blow both of us up. Like, it's clear that you're not going to stop. You're crazy. So guess what? I can be crazy too. And this is really great because Joker goes, oh, this guy means it. And I don't actually want to die. And he starts calling for Batman because he knows that Batman will save him. What do you think about that?
I enjoy this, but I'm also a little head tilt at that. I enjoy that the Joker doesn't want to die because in the end, Joker wants recognition because he's a megalomaniac and a narcissist. But also, I would think that the Joker would out-crazy everyone around him. It takes a little bit of the Joker's power away from him for the benefit of a character that we never see again. I love it as a storytelling device, but in terms of it building the mythos of the Joker, it gives me pause a bit. Because we're just getting to a point where we're seeing why he's so formidable. And somebody who's completely random is able to get a rise out of him just by saying, I'm going to blow you up. I would almost say that the Joker would lean forward and say, do it.
I actually sort of disagree with you here. I think that Joker knows the game that he's playing with Batman. And he knows that no matter how crazy he gets, Batman will never cross that line into ending his life. Like, it'll always be this cat and mouse. Yeah, you'll put me in jail, but I'll arrange an early parole, which means I'll escape. And he thinks he can play the game with Charlie, but he doesn't realize that other people can be willing to cross that line if they're pushed far enough. And I think that this was him learning that lesson. I think it gives him more room to grow. And so I think he's grown this much into having more of this mythos, but I think that this is his, I think that this is a growth moment for him. I think he didn't realize that the game he plays with Batman is not going to be the same game with ordinary people that he ropes into his nightmares. And so this was him learning the lesson that if you push normal people too far that don't have as strong of a creed as Batman does, that you could learn to pay for it. So yeah, I think that's my pushback on that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have had Joker fold so quickly. It just, I love it for the story, but in terms of the long arc of Joker, particularly because we never circle back to something like this again, and it's never shown that he's like, oh my God, Batman. But then again, I'm going to play devil's advocate on myself a little bit, because now I'm zooming out in the wider context of Joker's character. There are moments where when people kind of flex on Joker where he cowers back and he's like, oh no, it's all good. He does that sometimes. There are moments even with Harley in the future where that sort of happens with Joker. And I think that if I'm going to rationalize it in my headcanon, I think that shows who Joker was before he had this persona. What kind of person he was. Maybe Joker was a Charlie at a certain point and
maybe
felt invisible before he snapped. And in those moments where he fears for his life, maybe fear is the only human emotion that Joker is still capable of having. Like, I wonder, question for you, Steve. If Scarecrow hit Joker with his fear toxin, what would Joker see? I have an answer to this, but I want you to answer it.
Maybe it's him 6 feet under, man.
I'm going to guess and or you on that because Arkham Knight hit the nail on the head about what Joker's worst fear would be. Joker's worst fear is, yes, being 6 feet under. But on top of that, everybody has forgotten about him. And they're like, Joker, yeah. Who? Who is that? Oh, who's the that Riddler's guy? A way better villain. Oh, no, he wasn't funny. He was just a Riddler gag clown. Ooh, maybe Joker targeted Charlie because he sees some of his old self or some of his hidden reasons for doing the widespread crime that he does in Charlie of not wanting to be invisible and not wanting to fade in the background. That could be some of that.
Well, it turns out Charlie was just joking the whole time and the bomb was fake. And Batman, for the first time in the series and one of the only times you're ever going to see it ever in this series, lets out what we can only assume is a genuine laugh of amusement Well, Joker lays there knowing that he's been duped by the person that he thought he was pulling the strings on the whole time. And we have a very, it's another like wonderful life homage there at the end where Charlie is now looking forward to getting his wife's meatloaf, even though he was complaining about it pretty heartily at the beginning of the episode. And that takes us into the credits. Charlie, do you have any final thoughts on Joker's favor before we head into our battering ratings for this one?
Charlie was on some bullshit. Meatloaf is amazing, but I digress.
Agree. Hard agree.
I think that this is the first great Joker episode that we have, and for that reason, I'm going to give it a great batarang score of 4 batarangs, baby. The voice acting from Mark Hamill was great. The voice acting from the actor who played Charlie was impeccable. He didn't miss a beat. The introduction of Harley Quinn, who was introduced in this show and went on to become her own creature. The gag with getting a makeshift bat signal was amazing. There are so many great things about this episode, and Batman was hardly in it.
Hard agree. I'm actually on the same level as you, a 4 battering rating from me as well. Agree with everything that you just said. Love the growth of the Joker. Loved how the story progressed. And yeah, not a ton of Batman, but sometimes you just need the correct amount of Batman, and I thought how he was used was very well done in this episode. So yeah, 4s across the board from myself and Charlie for Joker's favor, and we will move right along to our second episode titled Vendetta, released on October 5th, 1992, written by Michael Reeves and directed by Frank Power. And the plot of this episode is the dark past of Batman's tormentor, Detective Harvey Bullock, is brought to the surface when crooks that might reveal him as a criminal mysteriously begin to disappear. Now the hero who Bullock's been trying to put away must unravel the frame-up, whose trail leads to mutant wrestler Killer Croc. And we go straight into the opening of this episode where a very shaky and nervous prisoner is being transported by boat. Montoya, Bullock, and Gordon all wait on the docks to receive him. And something pops out of the water and places the bomb on the boat. So you get a little Killer Croc moment right in the beginning. Batman is also watching the boat and something snatches that snitch as Batman watches the boat blow up. And he races off in his own Batmo boat. As the cops obviously don't drown, they get back to the docks and they all go fan out to figure out what happened. Back at the police headquarters, Batman listens to Gordon and Bullock argue on keeping him on the case because there's a connection to Thorne and Gordon needs to keep him away from it for some reason. So Batman goes off to figure out why he needs to keep Bullock away from it. So he snags his file right before Bullock goes looking for it. So Bullock's like, yeah, distant past, what are you talking about? And it turns out he was suspected for being on the take 2 years ago. So Steve almost feeling vindicated here until, spoilers, he's never on the take. So he continues to not be dirty, which is, you know, it's fine. I can be wrong about stuff. I'm telling myself that I can be wrong about stuff. Anyway, Charlie, what do you think of this setup so far with our guy Harvey?
The biggest win that this episode has is that it interweaves one of my least favorite characters, Rupert Thorne, with one of the great villains, Killer Croc, in this episode. This is how you do a episode about crime in Gotham. I think just an episode about a criminal like Thorne or Falcone doesn't work for the cartoon because, again, it's a cartoon. And if we just lean on a street-level threat who Batman could easily dismantle, who doesn't really have a gimmick, I don't want it. Not only do they have Killer Croc in here, they introduce him in a very Jaws-like manner because we don't fully see him right away. Just seeing a little glimpse of him at the beginning with the boat when we don't know what's happening was great. This is, again, why I'm glad we're doing this in chronological order, because if this were out of order, we wouldn't have the payoff of just seeing how Bullock is undoubtedly a piece of shit. We saw in POV how he has an overinflated sense of ego about how he does his job, and on leather wings, he was all about getting that SWAT team after Batman and is just never a big Batman fan. So we're set up to believe that he could be a crooked cop, and the pieces are all in place from this opening, which I think is one of the best openings across the series we've seen so far, because it braids together the police, a street-level threat, and somebody from Batman's rogues gallery who's a heavy hitter.
Totally agree with that. There's people like me who are doing the Leonardo DiCaprio meme of them snapping at the TV being like, hey, 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 it's him. He's dirty. We were right. But, you know, we were wrong. It's fine. And so after a quick, it's not even really an introduction of Killer Croc. You just see Conway waking up in this underwater lair who seems to recognize this so far pictureless beast that appears before him. And then we get a return of the Thorn. And Thorn is gardening in his greenhouse. And Batman pays him a visit by breaking one of the windows, which you're just kind of like, why did you do that? Other than to just like mess with him. More great lighting animations of Batman's eyes in the darkness and the rain and the lightning, just so freaking good. And as he's chatting with Thorn about the situation, these goons pile in with a bunch of guns and they point them at Batman, and Batman backs them out of the window that he broke and jumps off of the roof with Thorn and uses his grappling hook to swing to another ladder, which, if we're talking real life, he just full on smacks Thorn into this ladder at full speed. Like, he would have rearranged Thorn's face if this was real life. But love the intimidation. The way that he leaves him is very Arkham Games, where he just kind of like strings him up by the leg and leaves him hanging there. But he claims that he has nothing to do with the disappearance of Conway, that he's got nothing on him. It wouldn't even bother him if he did testify, and that's when Batman drops him and continues his search. Great scene, honestly.
I wish it would have come a lot sooner, because I fucking hate Thorn. Like, yeah. Why is he such a big threat? I don't know why the show kept trying to make him a big deal. Stop trying to make Thorn happen. Thorn and Thatch are never gonna happen. I'm tired. Steve, I'm tired of seeing this man. Tired of seeing him.
You're tired of seeing an old white man on your screen? What a surprise. Same.
Maybe if he were hotter, I wouldn't mind.
Maybe, yeah, if he was more Anderson Cooper.
Maybe if he looked more like Bullock when he is all guzzied up and just has
Silver Harvey? Silver Harvey. Bullock? That's a different version of Big Bad Harv that I want in my life immediately.
Daddy Bullock.
Call back. Daddy Bullock, indeed. So Batman and Gordon are taking a beach stroll together and are talking about Daddy Bullock. And Batman's on Team Steve. He thinks that Bullock is dirty, and Gordon is on Team Charlie, who pushes back and says, no way, this is one of the, he might have his unique way of doing things, but this is one of the best and most loyal cops I have on the force. And then the moment Montoya appears, Batman's gone, which again, I love it. Love that Batman only talks to Gordon and really works hard to make sure that no one else sees him talking to Gordon, which I think is good.
Steve, maybe he has social anxiety.
Maybe he has social anxiety. Listen, I have also experienced rendezvous with an individual that I didn't want anyone else to know about, so been there, done that. I get
Wait,
it, dude.
Steve, is it me? No. Am I the individual? Is it Charlie?
No, it's not. I promise.
Okay. This, just checking.
It's not appropriate. Well, it is probably appropriate podcast talk, but we're going to stay focused and I'm not going to get myself in trouble. Anyway, okay. Batman, after his little rendezvous with Gordon, finds a little tiny glove and some wreckage of a boat, and someone posing as Bullock waddles up to the prison, dripping
not
wet.
Not waddles.
No, waddles, definitely. Did you like my play on words there? He waddles a little bit.
He
slumps up in his dripping wet trench coat, and our one of our few Riddler trophies here that Charlie let me know is that the voice of Harvey Bullock actually was the voice of, as we know later, Killer Croc in this moment. It's Croc impersonating Bullock to confront someone else who seems to know him. And Bullock is then arrested at a diner for suspicion of said breakout that poorly disguised Killer Croc perpetuated in this scene.
Have you seen the Little Rascals movie?
Oh my god, yes. That's what it reminded you of?
It reminds me of the Little Rascals movie where they're like...
Too good.
Okay, tell me your account number here. 7? 7? 8? It kind of reminded me of that moment. Little Rascals is one of my favorite films.
So at the Batcave, Batman is examining the glove under the scope. I just want to shout out our last guest, Alex, because he made a comment here about how when Batman's by himself or with Alfred in the Batcave doing science things, he still decides to wear the Batsuit in its entirety, and he is 100% doing that in this scene, and now I'm never going to be able to unsee it. It's just like, why you gotta wear your mask to like look at a microscope when you're hanging out by yourself, dude? It's super funny. Anyway, shout out to Alex. You were a great guest. And for some reason, Alfred, like, referencing a crock pot cues him that, like, that it might be a crocodile because it's like part human, part reptilian. Do we think he knows about Killer Croc already? Because he seems to like have to do some like research to figure out who this guy is. So it's just, I didn't quite bridge that gap to like Alfred referencing a croc pot and Batman being like, this might be a crocodile man.
Well, after he was almost eaten by a plant monster that looks like a vagina, nothing's off the table.
It's true. He did just have Clayface.
But I do also Clayface, who is the original gay icon.
Original OG.
The OG.
Move over Harvey Milk.
Move over Harvey Milk and Harvey Dent. Ayo. I did kind of laugh to myself when Batman went to the actual zoo to kind of follow up on this hunch. It was giving Magic School Bus, but you know, you got to do what you got to do.
If only they went microscopic into somebody's bloodstream, that would have just really done it for me. Oh man, Magic School Bus, what a classic.
That's the crossover content. I didn't know I needed. Just Batman and Miss Frizzle solving a crime inside of Joker's bloodstream.
I'd be so into that. Batman gets his confirmation that it is crocodile skin or whatever, and he pulls up to an underwater cave where he finds the two kidnapped goons, and Croc pops out of the water. We get to see him in full. He's huge. He's terrifying. And he immediately handles Batman. He's like, oh yeah, one little benefit to being a croc man is that I have the strength of a goddamn crocodile. And he just tosses him into the water and starts to drown him. And he gives some background on himself before Batman manages to kick himself free, which is where he was like, I was a circus performer and I was a professional wrestler. And then I turned to a life of crime. And that's it. Like, we don't know why he's a croc baby or a croc person, but we do kind of find out that that's what he was like as a child. So he was a croc baby and grew up into a croc man.
He is a full-ass croc man. I like that we get just a little bit. I like that they didn't go the Danny DeVito route from Batman Returns and have him just go, and like you, I just want respect. I think this was a really great, with somebody like Croc, less is more, because I think that outside of being, you know, grotesque on the outside, on the inside, he really is just a two-bit thug. He really is one of the pettiest villains. I would argue Croc is the pettiest villain in Batman's rogues gallery. Even if he weren't a Croc, he would be like this. And I will die on that hill. Croc is just kind of garbage.
Let's get into the finale of this episode. We get that context download that Croc was that sideshow at a circus turned wrestler turned criminal, and he was busted by Harvey thanks to the two guys that he had kidnapped that Batman has just escaped with. And catching Croc can clear Bullock's name, but they need to lure him out. So it turns out that they don't really need to lure him out because Bullock gets into a car and Croc is just there and realized it was him who set him up. But Batman's also there, who stops Croc from hurting Bullock and chases him down into the sewers. And Batman uses a bright light to try and incapacitate Croc here, which works, and he gets a good kick in.
How cool did this look? Batman.
It looked awesome. And his like ultraviolet, protection visor on his, animating the eyes of Batman just seems to really do it. They seem to figure out that like the face and the scowl and the glowing eyes is like really a selling point of how intimidating Batman can look. And I feel like they've really leaned into it in these two episodes. And Croc gets Batman underwater. I love that he's very outmatched strength-wise here. He can't just punch his way out of it, so he relies on his gadgets. He ties Croc up in one of his grappling hooks. He shoots him into a brick wall, and Croc ripping that brick wall out causes the entire underground of the sewer to collapse. And Batman pulls an unconscious Croc out of the sewers for Bullock to arrest and take in. And I really liked this little moment of understanding. Bullock's rolling up with a gun drawn. You think that he's either going to like try and kill Croc or try and arrest Batman for a second, but they actually just like have a conversation and they have a little bit more like understanding. And Batman's like, I know we do things differently, but like we both care about the law just as much as the other person. Here's your guy. I'm out of here. I thought it was really good. What do you think?
I thought that was good. I love that look of understanding between them, and Bullock being like, why'd you help me? And I really like how flexible Batman can be. He definitely has his hangups, but when it comes to it, at the end of the day, he just wants crime to be exterminated from Gotham, and he's willing to go through it by any means necessary.
100%. And Bullock has a little moment on TV to finish off the episode where he's been vindicated of his crimes, and he has this speech that he's kind of like the same old Bullock. He's like, I'm gonna be there to stop you criminals. And Batman, watching the telecast, gives a little smirk at his final speech because he knows that, you know, maybe they have a little bit more understanding, but it's the same old Bullock. So I'm really interested to see what the dynamic of their relationship is going to be moving forward. Just some quick final thoughts before we hit up our Batarang ratings for this episode. I honestly, Charlie, I really enjoyed watching both of these episodes. They were really fun. I thought they had some great villains. I thought they had some great storylines. I thought the animation was even like continuing to ride that high from that second episode of Feet of Clay. And so I'm going to also bestow Vendetta with a 4 Batarang rating. So what do you have for this one, Charlie?
Call me Selena Kyle, because I am going to copycat the shit out of that Batarang.
Let's go.
Rating. 4 Batarangs for this episode. The animation was impeccable. The voice acting was impeccable. But more than that, the writing, the way that it wove together so many different elements of the show, some of which don't always work for me, like Thorn, really set me on fire. I also think that the show is at a point where it's starting to have fun with its premise, and it's starting to play around with certain things that it does. I think that once you have characters impersonating other characters, like Croc did with Bullock, that's when the audience has a lived-in knowledge of how Bullock typically is, and they can enjoy somebody treading inside of a characterization that we've seen done to different varying levels of success before. I thought that that was amazing, and I just love the image of Batman's glowing red eyes. I love that we caught glimpses of Killer Croc. You know what? Actually, fuck that. 4.5 Batarangs.
Let's go. Nice. Episode,
because I think while it isn't a masterpiece, it is a good showcase for what this show can do well when it's firing on all cylinders. This is a great episode, and I think particularly within the canonical existence of Charlie and Steve Watts stuff, I'm glad that I've witnessed you making it here, because you thought Harvey was corrupt.
I can finally fully take that L.
Yeah, you thought, I knew this was coming. I knew Daddy Bullock was gonna...
Never doubt Daddy Bullock.
Never doubt Daddy Bullock, you know.
Sage advice.
Soon to be Zaddy Bullock. Okay, I'm kidding. Not really.
I love it, man. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Charlie and Steve Watch Stuff. We watched the two episodes, Joker's Favor and Vendetta. And we'll be back next time with our next episode of Batman the Animated Series with the two episodes, Fear of Victory and The Clock King. For myself, Steve Selnick, and my good friend, Charlie Peppers, we will see you on the next one. Thanks, friends.
Bye.